Hello, welcome to the IPR podcast. Today, I am conversing with Siba Gurvogi, Professor of International Relations Theory and African Political Thought at Cornell University. Recently, the IPR published 5 essays that Siba wrote on Russia's aggression against Ukraine, as well as comments and discussions by other colleagues and friends. So the first essay is titled Putin's Ukraine Adventure, How Should an African Respond? So Siba, could you tell us why it is important for you and, you know, why should we be interested in an African response to the war in Ukraine?
I think I thought it would be interesting because everybody seemed to be asking the same question when the Ukraine war started. And as you see in the essay from the Voice of America, Radio France International, BBC, everybody was saying, why aren't African talking? The obvious answer, given my essays, was that Africans were actually thinking and talking about the war, but simply on different terms than the protagonists wanted. The questions of aggression, the questions of sovereignty, the questions of international deliberation, the question of diplomacy and war have been clearly central to Africa, given our own history of colonialism, of occupations, to self-determination, non-aggression, maintaining borders as they were, and etc. Our concerns are not necessarily who's right, who's wrong. In this particular conflict, it is why this kind of conflict keep happening and what do we do to prevent them in the future. We tend to have different memories of the international order. We have different memories of what took place and what was promised. And then what happened afterward. I was actually thinking about a conversation I had with a Polish scholar after the fall of Berlin Wall. He was so happy we met at Columbia University, and he was trying to lecture me about how great this was and etc., and how fantastic NATO European ascent was good for the world. I had to tamper his enthusiasm and say, do you know that when we say, for instance, 1956, Soviet invasion of Hungary, when the tanks were rolling into Hungary from the Soviet Union, France and Britain were attacking Egypt in 1956, US crisis. When I wrote my third essay about inching toward perdition, or whatever I called it, this idea of 1 inch, you know, whether NATO could move 1 inch beyond whatever. When I was writing that, I was actually saddened. Because that's in all of the Ukraine crisis, that is the worst argument anybody could make. Because China could remember unequal treaties. Native Americans could hear broken treaties. Africans could hear, right, everybody hears something in that. People want to make argument, they think it's very logical and persuasive to themselves and not understanding how that reverberates elsewhere. And so allowing that the different spaces are spaces of production of both knowledge and morality, and to understand that argument from different spaces might enlighten certain dimension of a conflict we are all facing. And that's what I wanted to do. So the question was always wrong by Western media by saying, why aren't Africans talking? It is why aren't we hearing Africans? And I think that that's actually for me the most important question. The subaltern has always spoken. It is, can is the subaltern heard? Can it be heard? If you put what is happening, what they are saying, et cetera, in this configuration that to which we are attached, that we recognize in the West as the dimension of the conflict, then you might not actually hear it. Because it might come out as unsympathetic to Ukraine, which it absolutely is not. If there's anything in Africa, it is we have sympathy for people who are being assaulted. We have been assaulted for 400 years. Russia's aggression is the easiest thing to condemn in all this thing. No, you don't go into other people's country. You don't do that. End of story, right? But as an African, if I say that, if you want me to say that, then you have to hear me when I talk about Palestine. Then you have to hear me when I talk about Chagos Islands. I'm an African. Chagos Islands is African territory. Nobody holds a privileged position now for the narrative of global politics, of international morality, and et cetera. It's far more complicated. We have to have a dialogue of multiple sources, but we shouldn't privilege one particular position. And the war in Ukraine seemed to bring in the West this tendency of this unilateral talking at the world.
Yeah, exactly. As you put it so beautifully, that, you know, we need multiple perspectives, sources, perceptions. But then I wonder, how would you respond to this critique or maybe perspective from coming from the forum who critiques your understanding of NATO as, quote, a instrument of war, end quote. And for her in this critique, this expression, quote, leaves no room for Eastern European agency who wanted and requested NATO membership, end quote, you know, out of strategic and cultural reasons. And her point is that, quote, a reflexively anti-NATO instinct ends up encountering a group of strange bedfellows, including regimes that have carried out human rights atrocities, which is Serbia, who is also anti-NATO. So I wonder, how would you respond to this particular perspective or critique?
Yes, I want to respond to that. Again, that is also, right? And this is where the dialogue we want to begin to break down. Mm-hmm. Because what I'm saying is not to deny Eastern Europeans the agency. It is to caution that agency is neither without consequence, nor does it exculpate one from moral responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
NATO exists before Eastern Europeans wanted to join it. And once they join NATO, they are bound by a treaty and a whole architecture of security. And whether they like it or not, they are part of it, right? And so the comment when I read it, I was saying, well, this is not telling me how we can renegotiate global security. It simply sent me that we should accept what is, and those people who want to enter it, if they want to enter it, they enter into it. France is a NATO member. On VE Day, the day of independence of Europe, is the day the French slaughtered Muslim worshippers in Algeria, in Sétif and Guelma in Algeria, more than 50,000 Muslims. The same France slaughtered in Charonne, Africans who were asking, who went to fight to free France, who were asking to be paid their wages after the war. I think there's a tendency to assume that we either uncritically accept NATO or we are anti-NATO.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's not that military capacity and et cetera can only be deployed in one way.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, that is not something I would accept, because obviously the West is involved in horrendous human rights violation from slavery to today and et cetera, et cetera. But it's not to actually talk about litany of Western violence or Russian violence. It is to really say, what do we do where we are today? And for me, for instance, in the context of agency, is to say that if NATO moves its borders toward Russia, it's not just, I don't care for Russia particularly. I'm not Putin. I mean, well, I do care for Russian people, but not Russia's strategic mind. You can tell from the article that I have no sympathy for Putin. No sympathy for Putin at all, right? But what happened to nuclear proliferation?
Mm-hmm.
Should we also forget that NATO advances with nuclear weapons being brought, and we are trying to tell Iran, you may not produce nuclear weapons, North Korea, you may not, but we are spreading the ones that we have. I mean, there's a lot of international regimes that are implicated in this war. It's not just nuclear weapons also, it's the environment, it's the survival of international regimes around the Antarctica, the North Pole and the South Pole. It's a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And just to assume that we should just, it's just a question of resolving a dispute with Russia here and whoever wins, it's actually far more complicated than that. And so we are on the brink of profound changes in the international system, and we should all be allowed to talk about it. And we should all recognize that our positions have consequences.
Mm-hmm.
It's not agency that I'm denying. I mean, people should be free to do what they want to do. But our actions have consequences. And the fact that Eastern Europeans want to join NATO doesn't negate what NATO has done in the past, what the charter says, and what NATO might do with its expansion and to the Russian border. So I'm not actually unsympathetic to Ukraine. I hope it comes true that I'm not unsympathetic to Ukraine. In fact, the Ukraine lack by moment was that Ukraine was betrayed. I actually realized that. When they asked Ukraine to give up nuclear weapons, they did not give Ukraine. Mm-hmm. That's what the Ukraine lack by moment was. So I am not unsympathetic to Ukraine. I do not deny Eastern European agency. However, saying that agency is not merely exercised by either joining NATO or not.
I think this is really powerful that we cannot reduce the discussion to either pro or anti-NATO or any other kinds of binary framing. And actually, one of the commentators in this forum also reflects upon what she observes as the third world being unwilling to take a side in response to the Ukraine war. And for her, not taking side, quote, represents a world influx that simultaneously bears the anti-colonial moral legacy of non-alignment, as well as the desire to harness capitalistic futures, end quote. So I wonder, what is your take on her idea of a world in flux? Or, you know, what's your take of her observation of the situation that the Global South is not taking a side?
I actually think this is what I'm saying. The fifth of the essays is called For the Love of Humanity. I think the third world so-called has always taken the side of humanity. Non-aligned movement that comes into that comment. The non-aligned movement was the one that fought for the seabed authority so that the sea is for everybody. There are the people who fought for to demilitarize space. There are people who fought for demilitarization at the United Nations, longest standing debate. There are the people too, and I can just go down the line. These concerns did not come from the powerful. They came from other people who actually thought that global politics should be harnessed for the betterment of the vast majorities. So third world non-alignment was not just not taking side, it was productively creating a new vision, new horizons. And it did. The law of the sea was very profound. It was telling people that Nepal, which is not a coastal country, has a stake in the sea. So does Lesotho, right? As well as America. So you can have your economic zones, and but the middle there is for all of us. This idea of the commons, people actually, there's a kind of subtle denigration of non-alignment, which seems to be that we don't take inside. It was actually one of the most productive moments at the United Nations. If I had to add one essay, and I want to say this, if I had to add one more essay, it would have been about alliances. You know, people think of alliances as a great thing. Alliances are actually a great thing if you are in it, but there's a dimension that has to do with morality that is not necessarily that has its own history. Look, military alliances, you know, they began with the Crusades, and then they went to dynastic alliances in Europe, and then we had 19th century alliances, we had, you know, World War I, World War II. All of these were caused, all of these great catastrophes, military confrontation happened while people were making and unmaking alliances. Right? Because alliances basically say we protect our turf and people who are in it protect one another, no matter whether they are wrong or right, and et cetera, et cetera. And it leads to certain kind of morally dubious positions in global politics. And so I don't want to basically just say, oh, sure, yes, we should either be pro-Russian, God forbid, or we should be pro-NATO. We say non-alignment because in the West and in the Soviet Union then, they could only think through alliances, which is why we're telling about alliances. Thinking through alliances is not actually a healthy thing for international politics, right? And so the non-alignment, it was called non-alignment, and they accepted the term non-alignment because they were saying, we don't want anything to do with these two blocks, we actually want new horizons. And they actually tried to cultivate some. It's actually far more complicated. I think that the third world was actually created spaces for international morality, different horizons in international morality that we have failed to study because we can only think through alliances. Broadly speaking, in conclusion, now I'm talking as somebody who's in the discipline of IR, as a professional in my field. We have to take seriously the multiple forms that international morality takes. We have to talk the multiple forms in which power flows. And they are not as two-dimensional as either our realist discourses or liberal international order, people who defend it, et cetera, want to make it look like.
Thank you, Siba, for joining us and giving us so much food for thought. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode.